We're going to complete our studies in Nehemiah, not every chapter, of course, because so many of the chapters give numbers of all the people that came back from exile. So we don't read all that in the organization of the temple as well. So we're going to look at sections of two final chapters. Well, chapter 6 is important, and the last chapter 13, that's important. So if you open up your Bibles, please, to Nehemiah chapter 6. Nehemiah chapter 6. This is when Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem the Arab and the rest of the enemies heard that I rebuilt the wall, that's verse 1 of chapter 6, and that there were no breaks left in it. Verse 2, Sanballat and Geshem said, "Come and let us meet together in one of the villages in the plain of Ono," where Nehemiah said, "Oh no." But they thought to do me harm. So they went about planning this. They said lies, they sent letters a bit further down in verse 4, 5, and 6, and so on. And all lies, of course. And then further over into the chapter, look at verse 6. Sorry, verse 8. "Then I sent to him, saying, 'No such thing as you say are being done.'" Now they're telling lies about him. "But you invent them in your own heart." But they're all trying to make us afraid. And now he says at the end of verse 9, "Now therefore, O God, strengthen my hand." Now we read from verse 10. Verse 10. "Afterwards, I came to the house of Shemaiah, the son of Debiah, the son of Meletabot, who was a secret informer. And he said, 'Oh, let us meet together in the house of God within the temple. Let us close the doors of the temple, for they are coming to kill you. Indeed, at night they will come to kill you.' And I said, 'Should such a man as I flee? And who is there since I who will go into the temple to save his life? I will not go.' Then I perceived that God had not sent him at all." See, the Lord gave him wisdom. "But that he pronounced this prophecy against me because Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him." There you are. How about that?
I didn't.
"For this reason, he was hired, that I should be afraid and act that way in sin, so they might have occasion for an evil report that they might reproach me." And of course, they would have killed him and this man also, Shemaiah, because he was in the pay of Sanballat, the enemy. He would have killed him in the temple. But wisdom prevailed. But then at the end in verse 14, you find Nehemiah praying, "My God, remember Tobiah and Sanballat according to these their works, and the prophetess Noadiah," whoever that was, "and the rest of the prophets who would have made me afraid." Now they would have killed him as well in the temple. There was a betrayal there and a pack of lies, and they tried to destroy him. But the Lord gave him wisdom to know what to do. Well, the rest of the chapter 6 is about the completing of the war. Look in verse 15. "So the war was finished on the 25th day of the month of Elul in 52 days. Now we go over to chapter 13. We'll find a very similar happened there. Chapter 13, please, the final chapter of Nehemiah. Chapter 13. Now read parts of it. There's all the separation of the work to do in the early part, of course, of the chapter itself. Now look in verse 4 to begin with. Here's a man called Eliashib. He was a priest, but he was a traitor. He had having authority over the storerooms of the house of a god, was allied with Tobiah. So here's a priest of Israel allied with the enemy. Ooh, like Shemaiah. So Nehemiah had all sorts of problems in the work of the Lord, and so do we. And look what Eliashib did in verse 5. "Now he had prepared for him a large room where previously they had stored the grain offerings, the frankincense, the articles, the tithes of grain, the new wine and oil and so on, which were commanded to be given to the Levites and the singers and the gatekeepers and so on. But during all this, I was not in Jerusalem. Now notice, all this was going on, this chapter, when Nehemiah was back in Babylon serving his king of Persia, maybe for a year or two, we don't know how long, possibly up to 2 years. And all this was going on behind his back. Now, the various things can go on behind our backs if we're not careful. There are people who will speak evil against us, unbelievers, I mean, or even those who become an enemy as well. So that must have happened. He says, I was not in Jerusalem, verse 6. During all this, I was not in Jerusalem, for in the 32nd year of Artaxerxes, king of Babylon, I returned to the king. Then after certain days, I obtained leave from the king, and he came back. Verse 7, I came to Jerusalem and discovered the evil that Eliashib, that's the priest, had done for Tobiah, the enemy, you see, with Sanballat, Tobiah, in preparing a room for him in the courts of the house of God. Will you imagine that? Giving a space for the enemy to come in and occupy part of the house of God. Now, doesn't that remind you about false prophets and false teachers? Doesn't that remind you about apostates even in the church today? It was happening then. 2,500 years ago. There's nothing new under the sun, is there? But he came back to Jerusalem in verse 7. And Eliashib put Tobiah in preparing a room for him in the course of the house of God. Now let's read on. And it grieved me bitterly. He was so concerned with the welfare of the temple for worship, for clean, holy worship. And here was pollution coming in, and he was bitterly grieved. Are we bitterly grieved if problems come into our churches or into our fellowships that are not right, which disturbs and even tries to break down the unity of the fellowship? We should be very grieved and concerned if ever it does happen. So this is a very practical chapter, once again, in Nehemiah, as it always is. But he wasn't in Jerusalem, but he came back to Jerusalem. He saw what was happening, preparing a room for him in the courts of the house of God, verse 7. Grieved me bitterly, verse 8. What did he do? Verse 8. It grieved me bitterly, therefore I threw all the house of goods of Tobiah out of the room. He came back to cleanse when things went wrong in his absence. Well, that does happen sometimes. So he threw them all out, verse 8. Verse 9, I commanded those to cleanse the rooms, and I brought back into them the articles of the house of God. They must have been thrown out. The worship of God must have been thrown out, and the enemy was allowed to come in and occupy the place. But you know very well that's going to happen again, isn't it? Because the Antichrist is going to occupy the rebuilt temple of God in the last 3.5 years of the tribulation. And the Jewish people are going to allow it. And the false prophet is going to encourage the worship of the beast and the image and bear 666 in their bodies. Similar, isn't it? Well, 2,500 years difference, yeah. So that was it. And he brought all the proper things back in. And he then sorts out the Levites and the rulers. Look in verse 11. Why is the house of God forsaken? You see, it was. In Nehemiah's absence, the whole house of God was forsaken. Doesn't say much for the people of Israel, does it? Or around Jerusalem. Where's their loyalty and where's their faithfulness? It eroded when Nehemiah was absent. It says a lot, you know, in the sense of you and I should be away, or some leaders away, or people away from the church. What happens? I think falsehood comes in as quick as can be. The enemy will see to it. The enemy saw to it here. He tried to kill Nehemiah. When he went away, they brought falsehood into the temple itself. That's easily done for the church too in our day. So Nehemiah sorted it all out in verse 11 and verse 12 and verse 13. And everything was sorted out. And he appointed the leadership as well in verse 12, 13. And then Nehemiah prayed in verse 14. Remember me, O my God, concerning this, and do not blot me out any good deeds that I have done for the house of my God and for his services. And this is what happened. He sorted it all out, and the blessing came eventually. Now, one of the big problems was, we didn't read this in chapter 7, but Nehemiah was a very good man practically. Because in one of the earlier chapters, it's in chapter 8, I think, and the people, again, Nehemiah was not there somehow, and the people themselves were greedy. They took off the poor and made the wealthy rich. And Nehemiah came back on the scene. It's in chapter 8. And he came back on the scene. And they knew that the whole book of the law had been read by Ezra as early part of chapter 8. So the problem out is that the people themselves simply did what they wanted to do. And that's the unfortunate thing. And the people came to confess their sins in chapter 9. So a lot of these chapters we didn't need to read, of course. But in chapter 13, this is quite something, isn't it? So I've just scattered over it just a little while. So in chapter 13, we've got a situation which is, of course, a very sad scene. Now, also, later on, Nehemiah had to cope with the problem of mixed marriage. A marriage of an Israelite with a pagan woman. He had this problem sorted out. Let's look in chapter 13. In chapter 13. The book of the law being read, chapter 13, verse 1. In the hearing of the people, it's found written that no Ammonite or Moabite should ever come into the congregation of God. No mixed marriage allowed. Because they had not met the children of Israel with bread and water, but hated them, and so on, when they came out of Egypt, of course. So then you find that the problem was that with the intermarriage, and then the Nehemiah had to do it. He had to deal with the problem. And, of course, that was also in chapter 30. What a lot of responsibility this man really had. It was a sad scene. There was a disobedience. There was an undermining of falsehood. There was attempts to destroy Nehemiah, this good, godly man, leading the people. So much was against him. And he comes back. And he sorts it all out. And he deals with the problem of the faithless. That's the people with intermarriage back in the time. They forgot the law of God, you see. And Ezra was the one to read it back again. So this was a real problem for him. So let's have a quick look at this again. Now, in chapter 12, we just look back in chapter 12. If you look in verse 27, you find there that a lot of these gates were completed. And verse 18, the other Thanksgiving choir were opposite there. I was behind them with half of the people and so on. There was worship going on. There was a setting up of the people and the tribes. And if you look in verse 43 of chapter 12, and we're dashing around, I know. Also that day they offered great sacrifices and rejoiced, for God had made them rejoice with great joy. Now that was something that's going on at the same time as wickedness, falsehood, lies, deception, plans of murder, mixed marriages. Yet there were those who still rejoiced in the Lord with great joy. You can see that. And the women and the children were also rejoiced. So the joy of Jerusalem was heard afar off, end of verse 43. The joy there was heard far off out of the city of Jerusalem. How about that? So that was really quite something, wasn't it? But Nehemiah still had to deal with these mixed marriages as it went on in there. In chapter 13, we find it. So this was, again, a very sad scene. There's Eliashib and Tobiah, and even Rashab did get Tobiah in the temple. It grieved Nehemiah on his return to Jerusalem, and he threw the belongings of Tobiah out, as I've told you already. And there had been abuse of privileges. Now, that's something very serious. There was an abuse of privileges. Very unfortunate. I wonder whether that ever happens in churches that we know. People who are not in leadership try and abuse those who are leaders and be very critical of them and abuse the leadership, try and cause upset. It does happen. Jealousy of people who are in leadership in the church, elders in the Brethren movement say something like that. Unfortunately, it does. It breaks up fellowship and it removes the joy of the Lord, which is going on at this particular time. So they had great privileges, and the Lord had blessed them as they renewed worship in the temple once again, set everything in the right order. There was still enemy opposition outside at the same time. So the only thing that is so important, I'd like you now, if you would, to go back, please, go forward right to the end of your Bible to John's second letter, the second letter epistle of John, just before the book of Revelation. I'd like you to go back there, please. The second letter of John, just before Revelation and Jude. Now, in 2 John, I'd like you to look, please, it's only one chapter, as you know, in verses 7 to 11. 2 John, verses 7 to 11. How this fitted the situation in Nehemiah in the temple as they went back from the exile. And John writes this, warning the Christians of his day. For many deceivers have gone out into the world who do not confess Jesus Christ as coming in the flesh. They deny his incarnation. This sort of person is a deceiver and an antichrist. Look to yourselves that we do not lose those things we work for. Nehemiah wasn't lose all that he was working for. Nothing must undermine him, not even their mixed marriages. That's got to be dealt with too. I know that's difficult, but he did it. Look to yourselves that we do not lose those things we work for, but that we may receive a full reward. That's what Nehemiah prayed at the end of the whole letter. Whoever transgresses and does not abide in the doctrine of Christ does not have God. Plain enough. He who abides in the doctrine of Christ has both the Father and the Son. That's us. If anyone comes to you and does not bring this doctrine, the deity of Christ, equality of the Father and the Son in eternal deity. If anyone comes to you and does not bring this doctrine, do not receive him into your house. Eliashib, who was a real traitor, should not have had to abide in the house of God, had it been rededicated, being rebuilt. That's what he said. Don't have him into your house, in your own home. That's an order. Don't have him in your own home. Verse 11, for he who greets him shares in his evil deeds. You identify with an evil person. Well, Eliashib did this. He linked up with Tobiah and he gave him room and set him into the temple of all places. Verse 12, having many things to write to you, I do not wish to do so with paper and ink, but I hope to come to you and speak face to face, that our joy may be full. Nehemiah wanted to speak face to face with the people of his day. So I think what John was saying there, which is just before AD 100, I suppose, that was so very important. Now, we could link about that, but other places I'd like to turn to as well. But one thing for us in the church today, we must not tolerate false teaching, a denial of Christ's deity, or the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit in the Trinity, or eternal salvation in the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. You've got to stand by that And anything less than must go out. Because that's apostasy. I'm afraid that doesn't often happen. But for the safety of those who are the Lord's people in the church, we must protect them. So important. So, now, no strangers were allowed in the temple. Now, I'd like you, please, if you go back, right back to Deuteronomy now, chapter 23, would you? Deuteronomy back to chapter 23. Again, this is a work of instruction to the Hebrew people by the Lord through Moses. Deuteronomy chapter 23. I'm going to read verses 3 to 6. You see the relevance. Deuteronomy 23, 3 to 6. And Nehemiah was living by this. Deuteronomy 23, verses 3 to 6. An Ammonite or Moabite shall not enter the congregation of the Lord. Well, there you are, in Nehemiah's day. Even to the 10th generation, that's a long time, hundreds of years. None of his descendants shall enter the congregation of the Lord forever, because they did not meet you with bread and water on the road when you came out of Egypt. They should have provided for them food, and they didn't. They denied them, wanted to fight them. The Amalekites fought them when you came out from Egypt. And because they hired against you Balaam. There it is. Hired Balaam. Well, in Nehemiah's day, the enemies of Israel hired Shemaiah. Here it is that the king of Persia, of Iran, or was it Iraq, one or the other, he hired Balaam to try and curse Israel. Of course, when he spoke, out came blessing, not cursing. Well, that's in Numbers 23. Yeah. And because they hired against you Balaam, the son of Beor, from Pithor of Mesopotamia, that's Iraq, Mesopotamia, to curse you. Nevertheless, verse 5, the Lord your God would not listen to Balaam, but the Lord your God turned the curse into a blessing for you, because the Lord your God loves you. You shall not seek their peace, nor their prosperity all your days forever. You don't seek the blessing, prosperity, on an apostate. Because they're an enemy of God. That's strong words. But Nehemiah had to deal with it. And Eliashib let this man Tobiah into the very temple itself, set him into his room, made him comfortable there. Out. When Nehemiah came back from Babylon, out he went, cleared the room, cleansed it, and made it clean and washed. So there it is, stand away from apostasy. In other words, this is a strong word again, but the Apostle Paul mentions, come out from among them, and I will be a father to you. That's important. So no strangers were allowed in the temple, right? Now I want you to go now to the very last book but one of the Old Testament, Zechariah. I want you to go to Zechariah, please. Zechariah. You find Zechariah, please, and we want chapter 14. Chapter 14 of Zechariah. Chapter 14 of Zechariah. Lovely book of prophecy, this is. And I want you to please notice the Lord is back. Verse 9, he's king over all the earth. Verse 16, he's in Jerusalem, and he's commanding people to go and worship him every year. Worship the king, verse 16. Now look in verse 20 and 21, the last two verses. Zechariah 14, 20 and 21. In that day, holiness to the Lord shall be engraved on the bells of the horses. The pots in the Lord's house, the temple, shall be like bowls before the altar. Yes, every pot in Jerusalem and Judah shall be holiness to the Lord of hosts. Everyone who sacrifices shall come and take them and cook in them. In that day, this is what I want. In that day, now the end of this verse. In that day, there shall be no longer be a Canaanite, a hostile enemy, in the house of the Lord of hosts. No hostile enemy anywhere near the house of the Lord. No hostile enemy anywhere near an evangelical church. So important, isn't it? So in that day when Christ is king in Israel, everything will be holiness to the Lord. In the Lord's house, in the city of Jerusalem, there will be no more Canaanite, a hostile person, or any other enemy in the house of the Lord of hosts. Holiness to the Lord, not uncleanness. In the New Jerusalem, the same. And the new heaven and the new earth, there will be no evil people in the new heaven and the new earth or the new Jerusalem. There will be in the millennium. People will be born in the millennium and they'll rebel against the Lord. Would you look at the very last comment now, Revelation, right the very last chapter. Book of Revelation, then we'll end. Book of Revelation, chapter 22. Chapter 22. And look at verse 11, please. Chapter 22 of Revelation and verse 11. See where the Lord divides people? He who is unjust, let him be unjust still. He who is filthy, let him be filthy still. He who is righteous, let him be righteous still. He who is holy, let him be holy still. The Lord divides the evil, uncleanness, sinful, unbelieving, rebellion, away from the believing, holy, righteous, and just. And just like he divided the sheep and the goats when he returns and deals with the enemies of Israel. Not one unbeliever enters millennium. Not one unbeliever enters the millennium, only the Lord's people. The people born, people still in the flesh, of course. Well, now that's Nehemiah, a very important chapter, an important book of teaching and learning, and how practical it is living a godly life and knowing we have an enemy coming to attack us time and time and time again, and even allowing evil people into the house of God. Well, we have a lot to learn from Nehemiah. What a godly man he was. What a godly man. We thank the Lord for the good teaching. Now, I didn't have time to clearing away all the rubbish, which I said I would do, but that's maybe something we can do separately. Clearing away all the rubbish before things can be built up again. There's a really good spiritual reason for all that. But I'll end there now. Thank you.